7 p.m. and the date is Monday, March 21st, 2005. Representative Lynn is en route, so we will have a quorum shortly. I don't foresee voting on any bills today. We have House Bill 203 and 216. House Bill 180, the workers' compensation bill, will likely hold because GCI network's down, and so there's no teleconference capability. Members present right now are Representative Guttenberg, Crawford, and myself, Chairman Anderson. Again, Lynn is en route, and I think the other members are also en route and will be referenced when they attend. House Bill 203 is motor vehicle dealer sales. I'm the sponsor of that. What I'd like to do is have my staff, John Bittner, present the bill, and then bill presentation to be followed by public testimony. Then we'll hold the bill pending any changes and expect this should go fairly quickly. So, John, why don't you come up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Bittner, and I'm staff to Representative Anderson. House Bill 203 revisits statutory language proposed in the previous legislature in House Bill 272. House Bill 272 was an extensive bill that dealt with many aspects of motor vehicle sales. The language in House Bill 203 was removed from House Bill 272 after it became obvious there was a need for further discussion with the affected parties. The sponsor of House Bill 203, as well as the sponsor of the Senate companion bill, Senate Bill 138, are currently working on hammering out a compromise regarding the exact language of this bill with the interested parties. You'll notice that the sponsor statement and the sectional analysis in your bill packets refer to a committee substitute to House Bill 203. I apologize for any confusion this may have caused. The Senate introduced a committee substitute to the companion bill last week in Senate Labor and Commerce, and I was working off of that version. Later, there was concern about the new language, and it was decided that we should wait until the various parties involved come to a consensus before we introduce a committee substitute. With your indulgence, I would like to instead speak on the intent of this legislation for a few brief minutes before allowing the people in the audience, and unfortunately not the people online, to share their thoughts and concerns with the committee. What the sponsor is trying to achieve here is an amiable and equitable compromise between new and used car dealerships that affects the highest amount of consumer protection, as well as allowing a reasonable amount of flexibility to dealers so that they're not unnecessarily burdened. House Bill 203 will amend AS 0866015 to modify the circumstances under which car dealers can sell motor vehicles as new or current models. Our goal here is to determine a standard for what defines a new motor vehicle so that cars which have been previously owned will not be sold to consumers as a new vehicle. The sponsor feels that both the consumers' and the dealers' needs can be addressed in a future version of HB 203 and look forward to being able to return to this committee with a product that is both effective and fair. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative Guttenberg?
Yeah.
And by the way, Representative Ledoux's present for making the quorum, even though we won't be voting on the new bills. Yeah, you might want to lower your chair even more. The head of Representative Ledoux is present.
Thank you. And you have our sympathies for having a boss that comes before you with a to support a bill that we don't even have the CS for. You know, we heard another version of this bill last year, dealing with what's a new and used car. And I'm never quite sure what's going on with who's protecting who or who's what's going on. But in the sponsor statement, a new vehicle must retain a manufacturer's certificate of origin and the manufacturer's warranty, and the dealer must have the current sales and service agreement with the manufacturer of the vehicle. Isn't that, is that intent? I mean, it seems like that all of a sudden you're restricting things just to dealers who are, a Ford or a Chrysler dealer. Is anybody able going to? Anybody else going to be able to get a manufacturer's sales agreement, sales and service agreement?
Through the
Representative Lynn is back again.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. There are other people in the audience who would be able to speak a little more intricately on that, but the problem we ran into was there were some issues with the CS, and I'm not entirely sure if the language that is reflected here is actually going to end up in the final version. I apologize.
No, thank you. I'm going to try to get that answer than something that's moving.
Sure. Okay, we'll go to Stephen Alwine.
Runaway chair.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Steve Allwine. I am a local automobile dealer. I'm a new car dealer. Well, I actually sell used cars, too. I am a former president of the Alaska Automobile Dealers Association, and I'm here today to speak a little bit on House Bill 203 and just also voice my support for some determination that needs to be made. In the past, House Bill 272 actually passed this body and ran into some problems in the Senate. Long story short, this is not as much about new car dealers as used car dealers. This is about people who, in a lot of respects, might create a situation where a consumer doesn't know if they're buying a new car or a used car, and whether, in fact, there is a warranty or there is no warranty on that vehicle. There are ways, doesn't matter if you're a new car dealer or a used car dealer, there are ways that you can circumvent the system and purchase a vehicle that is new and then subsequently manufacture a used car. And in a given set of circumstances, if you have a connection with somebody as a new car dealer, I have the potential to do this. If you have a situation where you have a connection with a rental car company, you can go in to that rental car company, make an arrangement, extract their inventory that they have ordered from the factory under some very specific incentives, and in fact come up with a price differential that is different than a new car dealer will. This also works if you go across country, because manufacturers place incentives in different markets and to varying degrees. So you, in a given situation, can go to the East Coast and buy a car from a dealer and bring it to this part of the world and effectively have purchased that car for less money than the dealer in the state of Alaska, the state of Washington, state of Oregon would purchase the car for. That's okay. Here's the kink. The kink is, in those situations, that vehicle may no longer be a new car. It may not have warranty, or the warranty may have already started and expired. In certain situations, if you buy what they call a gray market vehicle, that vehicle potentially could have no warranty on it. So the issue isn't always whether it's used car dealers or new car dealers. The issue is, what does a customer perceive when they walk in and they look at a car? And if you walk in and look at a car, even if it's on a used car dealer's lot, and that car is a current model, 2005, and it has 2,200 miles on it, I don't care what the salesman tells you, your perception is going to be that that's a new vehicle. And that may be a problem to the consumer in the long run. And new car dealers, unfortunately, are the people who have to handle those problems when they come up. The current statute that's on the books now needs to be changed for one very important reason. The statute was done in 1993, and it was to preclude brokers from creating the image that they were new car dealers and holding their vehicles out as new cars. We have found over time that what has happened is the statute was written wrong, and so essentially, if I take in I'm a Chrysler dealer. If I take in a 2005 Ford right now, I am out of compliance. I urge the committee, or I respectfully request, Mr. Chairman, that the committee review the committee substitute from the Senate. We would urge that you all address this issue, and the Dealer Association and the used car dealers and the new car dealers are here to help, and I remain available for any questions.
Thanks, Steve. I'll have my staff work with you and the folks facilitating the bill, and then we can bring this bill, as I noted in preface to the beginning of the meeting, that we'll bring it back once we have some agreement. Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. It seems like you're a better recourse than to do this state by state would simply go to the manufacturer. And I'm sure you're not able to do this, because it's obvious that they sell things in a broad range of categories and prices that you're trying to, you know, people will. I mean, and I thought about buying a vehicle back east, and, you know, is it be cheaper to buy it back east and drive it back here? And the economics never seem to work out by the time I get it back.
And would you get a 1977 El Camino cheaper there or here anyway?
It was a 72. And I needed a new engine in Iowa, right on. but Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I mean, have you guys made overtures to the manufacturers, you know, to address this issue?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I sit on the Dodge Dealer Council for the Western Business Center, which encompasses seven states up and down the West Coast. We have sung this song, and it's economically it gets to be a little more complicated than that. I wish that the manufacturers had the ability to fix it, but the overtures that we've sung and the tune that they hand us back is we can't do that right now.
Didn't want to. Okay.
Anyone else?
Yeah.
Representative
Vinn. This doesn't have anything whatsoever to do with the old Canadian car issue, does it?
Not really, sir. Through the chair, respectfully. Representative Lynn. And no, it doesn't. It has to do with automobile retailers circumventing the law, going into a gray area, and creating a vehicle that in the normal consumer's mind would represent a new car, when in reality it may not be.
And again, if I, this had nothing to do with gray market cars coming from Europe or anything.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, it can, truthfully, it can, but we have the ability under the current statutes, because we're disregarding the statute now, it's unenforceable. We have the ability under the current statute to do it within the country. We don't have to go places, other places to do it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Crawford?
Just a comment. I think because of the change in the value of the dollar to the Canadian dollar, some of that has corrected itself over the last couple of years, if I'm not mistaken. That would still be an issue out there if it was a dollar American to $1.50 Canadian, right?
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, that is correct, but that also works the other way, because this issue has come up where dealers in the southern states were marketing into Mexico. So this issue exists where you go, but it has that portion has decreased significantly. But the fact of the matter is, we still need to take the statute, we still need to correct the statute, because it is wrong and it's unenforceable in its current condition.
Okay, yeah, go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. Are there just a couple of issues? Are there any new car dealers that don't offer the manufacturer's warranty?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, the manufacturer's warranty, if you buy an automobile through a new car dealer, the manufacturer's warranty will be on that new car, because the manufacturer's required to warranty that vehicle. There are given circumstances if you are a subsequent owner where in reality that warranty may cease to exist.
Can I follow up,
Representative Guttenberg?
I bought a new vehicle this year. And I have a manufacturer's warranty and a note, but it seems like, and I would have to go back and check this, that I'm not sure the warranty is actually with the same company that is the manufacturer. In some cases, it would seem like, you know, they set up an independent corporation under their own name, and you think you're buying it, but you're buying it from actually somebody else. Could that possibly be an issue?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg.
I'm sorry, just as the loan is, I think I've got a loan from the manufacturer, but it's from the manufacturer's holding company that's doing loans.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. The specific incident you are talking about would be a service contract. If you purchased a new vehicle from a new car dealer, franchised automobile dealer, the warranty that you have is from the manufacturer. There is no holding company. It is, whether it's General Motors or Ford or Toyota or Honda or Subaru, it doesn't matter. Any subsequent warranty that you bought, and warranty is really a misnomer, any subsequent coverages you purchased would have been service contract coverages. And that's part of the issue we have here. It is conceivable that you can walk into a dealer's lot, a retailer's lot, look at a vehicle with 2,000 or 3,000 miles on it, that's 60 or 90 days old and it does not have a manufacturer's warranty, but you think that that's a new vehicle. And they, and you ask, being a reasonable consumer, you say, does it have a warranty? Oh, yeah, it's got a service contract. You can get a service contract. It's 5 years. It's 60,000 miles. There's lots of things that go on. Those can be manufacturers holding companies. Those can be individual insurance companies, number of different things. If you bought a new vehicle and you bought it from a new car dealer and it was in reality a new vehicle, you have a manufacturer's warranty. You may have some subsequent coverage through a service contract, but the initial purchase should have been a manufacturer's warranty. And if you don't, you did not buy a new vehicle.
Good. Anyone else that wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none, then we'll hold the bill and we'll work on that. And thank you very much. Okay, House Bill 216. And just for folks, Barbara and others waiting for House Bill 180, GCI, the thing is down, the telecom is down. And so once we're done with 216, we're probably not going to hear the bill because there's no one to testify online, and my guess is that'll happen. But you're welcome to listen in. I'll make the announcement after this bill's heard, and we're going to hold 216 as well. So my trusty other staffer, El Numero Uno, Josh Appleby, will testify on House Bill 216, and we'll have the presentation to include. I don't know if Linda Hall's here, if she's going to have some. Oh, by phone. Okay, so Linda Hall won't be able to do that by teleconference. We'll have public testimony, and I think there may be one or two here, and then we'll hold the bill. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Josh Appleby, staff to Representative Anderson. I'm just going to do an initial presentation on House Bill 216. We have in the audience representatives from both the Division of Insurance. We have Sarah McNair Grove here, as well as John George from industry, to better explain the bill, better explain the minutia that's in the bill, and the motivations behind its introduction, and answer any specific questions. I just want to let the committee know that this bill is a result of discussions among the insurance companies, the agents, the director of insurance, and her staff, discussions that started this summer back in July and have been ongoing over the past 9 months. The participants in this effort used the flex rating model adopted by the National Conference of Insurance Legislators, or NCOIL, as a starting point. Some elements of the NCOIL model were adopted, but others were discarded. However, House Bill 216 is consistent with the NCOIL model's goal of modernizing state insurance regulation. We believe that House Bill 216 will create a more dynamic, more competitively oriented insurance market in Alaska. The competition on rates and forms that House Bill 216 will encourage will benefit Alaska's insurance consumers. And so really that's all the introduction I have, Mr. Chairman. And like I said, we have both sides of both the division and industry here to get into the real nitty-gritty.
And Josh, so with Linda not being able to testify, so you will be – okay, good. Just, and if you – we'll obviously keep public testimony open. And then just the other question, and I don't ask this for staging, but I forget. When Governor Murkowski was elected and Devery Prince and the others were on the transition team, isn't this what they were – the modernization bill, this is part of what they were talking about and what his focus was?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the transition team that dealt with insurance and insurance related issues really took a hard look at insurance regulation modernization.
Okay.
And this is a product of those discussions even 2 years ago.
Perfect. Okay, good. Representative Roper?
Mr. Chairman, if you could refresh my memory, perhaps Josh can, is this a bill that we took up in the last legislature, or is this confusing it with another?
I was going to sponsor a modernization bill, and you and I talked about that, but I don't think it
occurred.
Trying
to remember.
No.
This is different.
Division of Insurance is saying no.
Thank you.
Who do you think's better?
I'm starting.
Okay, come on.
I'm out of here.
What's that?
I said if I could just make
a comment. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Go ahead. Representative Crawford.
Just right from the start here, the title on this thing is really broad. I'd like for y'all to take a look at it and see if you couldn't narrow it down a little bit more so that it's a little more specific as to what we're talking about.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Guttenberg?
With all due respect for your staff, who I know you work really hard, the sectional analysis, was this done by legal or the agency or...
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, it was done from somebody outside the legislature. Okay. But it was done by a lawyer.
Okay. Oh, the simple sectional analysis?
Yes. Somebody from the outside the state government, but a lawyer representing.
A lawyer representing who?
Well, specifically, Mr. Chairman, I believe that Mr. George could answer that question specifically.
Okay.
This is just a general. A lot of times we see things that are on stationary and or there's no reference for who did it, and it's always nice to know.
The different font. It's obviously not from. Yeah.
Well, Josh is real busy, and this is quite a document. Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, it is appropriate for the committees to take outside sources for analysis,
yeah.
But I do agree that it should be disclosed. That, you know.
Okay. It has been. Thanks, guys. Okay. Senator Kelly, do you want to join us up here?
What?
He says, dream on.
Been there, done there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is John George. I'm representing the Property Casualty Insurance Association of America. And really, I think I speak for virtually the entire insurance industry. We've been working on legislation for at least 9 months. And as you say, last year there was a bill we were talking about that was really at our behest as well, because we feel that there are things that need to be modernized in the insurance regulatory system to improve insurance regulation and also allow for better competition, to increase markets, to encourage more companies to write insurance here. We have a problem in that we have a couple of companies writing auto and homeowners insurance and not many. There's a number of companies licensed to write, but really only two or three or four that are major players, and if one of those would bail out of the state would have a real problem. And so we need to encourage more competition, split up the business among more companies to avoid that concentration. As far as the section-by-section analysis, that was done by an analyst from the Property Casualty Insurance Association of America. We were doing that in a hurry to get it to the committee by last Friday when we thought the hearing was going to be. Little concern on our part that it's very technical, and whether you wanted to wade through the technical part of that or you wanted the real executive summary that Lamon could understand the first time reading it instead of the 12th time trying to scratch your head and figure out what exactly it said. And it is a difficult document to read. The concepts are actually fairly simple, though. And is that my prepared statement? Okay, what Josh is handing out is a statement I had prepared. It closely mirrors what Josh has said, and so I'm going to depart from that, but it certainly does express our feelings and concerns about the bill. We have been working diligently with the Director of Insurance. The division has been very cooperative. We've reached agreement on virtually all points. There's a couple things we're still working on, but I think we all agree that we're going to come to an agreement on those. We have what would be a committee substitute that we have just about ready, but it didn't get to drafting, and so we don't have it before you today. And I would suggest that we probably get into the technical aspects of the bill once we have that document that the division and the industry have agreed on, rather than going over things that we haven't quite resolved.
Is the committee comfortable with that, though? Just we'll wait, because there's no need to go through different subsections and waste time. We can get you out early rather than it's going to be a newer bill.
And a good part of the changes have to do with drafting. As you're aware, they've changed legislative drafters on insurance issues. Yeah. And insurance is not an easy thing to draft, and it's going back and figuring out which sections apply and all. And so he did a great job of getting out in a hurry. We found a lot of things that just technically need to be adjusted, as well as some of the principles. But the fact that we've all gotten together, we've agreed, we think that this will improve competition, it'll encourage new markets, it gives the division a adequate regulatory authority to provide the public protection needed, but it also increases their efficiency. a lot of what they have to do now is sort of redundant, going over all these filings, and this would eliminate some of that redundant work. It requires the insurers to certify compliance with statutes, and allows the division to concentrate on things that are more productive, I guess. And obviously, the division is the one that really ought to comment on that. It does follow, in principle, the NCOIL model, the National Conference of Insurance Legislators model legislation. This is a national effort across the country. We're seeing states going to this modernization to try and improve efficiency. And really, the law we have now, I was director in 84, and when I came to the division in 73, the law we have today is essentially the law we had then, and it just doesn't really fit well with the times. And so I think it's time for modernization, and we hope to by the next hearing have a redraft for you to look at that we're all in agreement with, and nothing better than having something that everybody agrees is the right thing. And we appreciate your time.
Thanks, John, and we'll hold on until the next committee unless someone has a pressing question. I think Representative Guttenberg makes a good point. Maybe you could simplify it. Even I think Representative Roper and I and those who have had to really delve through this, it gets kind of complicated if the section analysis is as long as the bill.
I had the same problem. I want you to know.
So maybe in a nutshell, because then it's easy to go through section to section, at least have a general idea, and then it's up to the committee to look through, as Josh said, the minutia if they have an amendment or disagreement or question.
Be happy to do that.
Thanks. Okay.
Representative Roper?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just kind of glancing through the file here. Apologize to sponsor the bill and the committee for not having looked through it more. But Mr. George, perhaps might be easier to understand the concept of flex rating. I know there's a number of graphs and charts here in the attached exhibit from the PCI Association, but I'm not sure I have a full understanding of an example of why flex rating is beneficial to consumers. Does it allow even decreases in rates? Do you have to have prior approval to lower rates now?
And John, maybe you could, through Representative Roper's question, maybe just answer just generally, briefly, what flex rating is so we understand.
For the record. Representative Roper, through the chair. Yes, flex rating allows rates to increase or decrease within a narrow band. So you file a rate, and from that, you can deviate up or down based on market conditions within that narrow band. If you want to go outside the band, you have to make a new filing and go through the approval process. But it does allow rates to decrease. Interestingly enough, the reason that rates are regulated is not because rates were excessive, but insurance companies in the early days were competing so vigorously that they were becoming insolvent and having inadequate rates. And so rate regulation really came about because rates were inadequate to cover the losses, and we sometimes lose sight of that and think it's someone trying to gouge the public by increasing the rates. But it's a very competitive market, especially now when you go to the internet and compare five companies' rates while you're sitting there. In fact, companies even advertise that they will do that for you. You give us your statistics, we'll give you the rates for five companies, and so there really is competition between the companies.
Representative Roper, then Representative Lynn.
But just so my statement or question was correct, that you have to have prior approval to lower your rates, all things under the current Alaskan law. Is that correct?
Oh, under current yes, Representative Roper, through the chair, that is correct. Any change from the rate that you have filed has to have prior approval, and that can be a lengthy process. It can take 30, 60, 90 days to get that done.
Mr. Chairman, I just might make a suggestion. Cursory review of the file doesn't indicate anything graphically that shows exactly what flex rating is, and then even the potentiality, I think, of pyramiding on it. Why would that not be an easier thing for companies to raise their rates? So if there's any graphical displays you could find from your
John, if you were
clientele, that would might be able to just to it's so not so necessarily the members of the committee, but when we go to the floor, we go to other members of the legislature, they can get a grasp of what we're talking about. Many times if we can do that, it helps. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Be happy to work on that.
Thank you, Representative Lynn.
I understand the upper limit, but why? Help me understand why there has to be a lower limit. You said it goes between the upper limit and lower limit. Why do we need to have a lower limit?
Okay, Representative Lynn, through the chair, and we do have division of insurance people here who actually approve or disapprove rates, and they might want to answer that question too. But I'll give you my turn on it. You come up with what you believe is the rate based on past experience, all the factors, right. And then that's approved. Things change, and so you may want to go up or down a little bit. If it's a drastic change, then, well, maybe we need to take another look and find out why it's so different. But if it's a minor change, you know, it's almost a ministerial kind of a thing. Do it. Don't bother with the entire process. Let's get it done. Do it. And that's why we have a narrow band. Anything within that is considered to be, you know, okay. But if it's a major change, that has to go back for another filing. That answers the question, but
partially, I guess.
Well, again,
because I'm concerned about rates going up, I'm not. Do we need to be concerned about rates going down?
Representative Lynn, through the chair, as I was explaining in answer to Representative Roper's thing, part of the problem is that insurance companies compete so vigorously that sometimes they charge inadequate rates, become insolvent, Fremont Insurance Company that caused the workers' comp problem.
Okay, that makes sense now.
So the primary goal of an insurance regulator is to make sure that you have a solvent insurance market so when someone has a claim, the claim will get paid.
Okay, got it.
And yet to keep the rates within the proper range.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Ledoux?
Isn't there some way other than saying that an insurance company can't charge lower rates that the insurance commissioner can figure out whether a company is solvent or not? Do we have anything else in place that would do that?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, yes, there's lots of things in place, but the amount they charge for insurance is certainly an incremental piece in that. Certainly their investments, loss history, I mean, a lot of things apply there. But, you know, those are probably questions you want to direct to the Division of Insurance who actually have responsibility for monitoring the solvency and the rates and policy forms.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, John. Representative Crawford, did you have one for Mr. George? Question?
Well, Harry's over there.
Yeah. Oh, did you have a question?
No.
But I did. I don't happen to be Representative Crawford.
Oh, did I say that? I'm sorry.
That's one of the good things.
Yeah.
Line 9 on the first page is, why is inland marine risk separated out here? And what is that about?
My name is Sarah McNair Grove, and I'm the property casualty actuary with the Division of Insurance. Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, inland marine is separated out in this particular instance because the risks can vary quite a bit, and so there's really maybe no average risk like you would look at in a more homogeneous type of coverage. So they're treated frequently separately or differently.
Good. I mean, that's an interesting answer. What is an inland marine?
Oh, what is
risk?
Inland marine?
Yes.
Sorry. Through the chair, inland marine deals with transportation type of risks, taking cargo from here to there. So it's marine, but it's done on land rather than on the water. So that's the terminology, inland marine.
It's still terminology, even though it's not on the water.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
That was lakes.
Okay, yeah, go ahead with your analysis. And you agreed to hold the bill as well, right?
Yes, that's fine.
So you can just give a brief overview and see if there's questions, and we'll come back.
Director Hall, I know, wanted to do this, and so I am here on her behalf. She did want to say that last year she made a commitment to this committee to work with industry, and so this bill is a result of that. And as has been mentioned, we had several meetings with industry and worked out some really difficult issues, and I think we've come up with something that we feel we can all live with. It does keep the consumer protections that are in our current law. The rating standards currently are that rates cannot be inadequate, excessive, or unfairly discriminatory, and we have not removed those. The big change is the process for by which an insurance company can put those rates into place. Everything would not now, right now, everything requires the division's prior approval. We look at it, we review it, we stamp it approved, and then after that, they can put it in place. This allows some processes by which they can put them in place without our prior approval. We still do review them. We will still look at them to be sure that they meet those rate standards. But the process will be different.
Right. Any questions now? And again, remember, we'll keep this open, and she's going to come back. So, Representative Rothberg?
Mr. Chairman, this is, what types of insurance coverage are we talking about? And this is property casualty. Is it limited to that, or does it go beyond, I mean, into, typically we categorize insurances and health insurance, workers' compensation, property casualty, life. I mean, how does this bill, what effect, how global is this?
Through the chair, Representative Rothberg, the bill deals primarily with property casualty rates, which would include things like your personal and commercial auto, your homeowner's umbrella, workers' compensation, fire, property coverages, the property casualty kinds of things on the rate side. And that's what Chapter 39 in our statute deals with, is the property casualty coverages. It does also change the way forms, which is the policy contracts themselves, and that would include all lines of business, health, life, as well as property casualty.
Yeah, if I could, Mr.
Yes, Representative Rothberg.
Did I say something else?
Yeah, if I may. Yeah, just to clarify, there are some exceptions to the use of the flex rating, and workers' comp is not subject to the flex rating part. I think that's an important aspect of that. Those have to be approved.
Okay, so, yeah, forgive me for not being familiar enough with the bill. So we have the forms, and we have flex rating, and then we have other reforms besides that?
Through the chair, Representative Rothberg, what we did in the rate filing chapter 39, is we essentially have three different processes by which rates will be filed and approved. One of them, we will retain prior approval for certain lines of business, workers' compensation, assigned risk, automobile rates, medical malpractice. I think that's it, are the ones that we left under prior approval, our current system. Then we have the flex rating, which is a plus or minus 10% cumulative over the past year. And if it's within that range, the company still has to file it with us, and then they can implement it on the day after we receive it. It has to be received, the filing has to be received in our office before they can actually implement them. And they will set the date that whatever they want to use, but it doesn't have to require our review and approval before they implement them. If it's within the plus or minus.
But the others do, like workers' comp, medical malpractice, they can't just change. It still goes through your review.
It still has
to
be
approved.
It's
these other ones.
Yes.
Like Allstate or something like that, to use a company.
It's not company by company. It's by type of policy.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
But Representative Crawford.
You just said that they could change under the flex rating 10%. Can you stack those 10% changes inside of a year? Is there a limit on that?
Through the
leave
chair,
ignorance here.
Representative Crawford, it is stacked in a sense. In a one-year period, if the cumulative rate effect is plus or minus 10%, then you can do the flex rating. If the cumulative effect is greater than that plus or less than that plus or minus 10%, then it falls under another filing process. And the third filing process, which it would fall under, would be what we call file in use. So they have to file it with us. We have a 15-30-day review period, and if it's not disapproved within that period, then it automatically becomes effective.
Okay, Representative Ledoux, then Rothberg.
Are the applications with respect to changing the ratings, would you say that there are more applications to make the rates go up or more applications to make the rates go down?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it can vary. We do see both. Probably over the past couple of years, we've been in what we call a hard market, and the rates have gone up probably more in the last year than gone down, but we have seen both. And it depends on the cycle of the market, because the market does this.
Representative Roper?
Yeah, just to clarify then, you mentioned 10% plus or minus. Could you, is that the band? Is it 10 basis points, or is it 5% plus or minus, or I'm not sure I understood that.
Through the chair, Representative Roper, it is plus or minus 10% of the insurer's existing rates.
So it could be a 20% band then.
Yeah. The total, I guess you would say, is 20%, but it's if the insurer's rates are here, they can go up 10% or down 10% from where they are currently, but it's cumulative over the year.
And I think I was interrupted. Representative Crawford had my question just to clarify the stacking or the time frame. So did you say it was limited to what type of time frame, the adjustment in the band?
Through the chair.
Oh, from the date of its filing for or what? No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Let me read it to you. Just
Representative Gutenberg, I'm going to, while she's looking, you're next, right? Did you have a question?
Sure.
Okay.
Go ahead. Through the chair, Representative Roper, it's on page 4 of the bill, and it says the cumulative rate level change.
What line?
I'm sorry, line 27. The cumulative rate level change calculated from the effective date to 12 months before the effective date is not greater than 10%. So you would look at the effective date of the filing, look at the filings they'd made in the previous 12 months, and if the combination of those is not greater than plus or minus 10%, then it falls under the flex rating.
Representative Gutenberg?
No.
Okay, Representative Roper, follow up?
Sorry, follow up there, yeah, right.
By the way, is this going to change in the committee substitute?
No, this piece is not.
I'm going to be annoyed if we just said that, and then you're asking questions, which I said don't do. Go ahead, Representative.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. I mean, if it's 10%, one way or the other, or you have a band of 20 basis points, if you will, is that typical in the national, other states, or what NCOIL has recommended, or
for the amount
the
of
band?
In
right.
flex rating, it varies by states that have this. I believe there are some states that's plus or minus 5%, and there are some states. I believe it goes maybe up to plus or minus 15%. I can get some specific information if you would like that.
Well, that would be very helpful, because that seems like a relatively large band, I mean, to me. Yeah. You almost, I don't know. I mean, it would also might be helpful to find out what typically rate adjustments are have been, and then what time, how much time it takes to get a rate approved. In other words, one of the arguments here of having this is that we need to have flexibility and the ability of the companies to react to market conditions, their losses, their portfolios, performance, et cetera, which makes some sense to me. But how long does it take now to get a rate approval in the state of Alaska? I think that would be helpful.
It does vary depending on the complexity of the filing. Some go as quick as the day we get them. Some of them have taken us several months, but we'll be happy to get you some specific information.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Representative Gutenberg, then Ledoux.
Thank you. And forgive me, but this goes under the title of urban legend. One of the things I hear when we always get into conversations is dealing with forms. And people say, well, you know, you get a document back from the insurance company, and you can scratch off something that, or change the number on something, and send it back. And generally, if it's not caught, then that's the contract. What is the legality of that, and what actually does happen? Are you aware of this, or?
Through the chair, Representative Gutenberg, I'm not aware of that, but the statute currently says that an insurer must use a form that has been filed with and approved by the director. So if we would approve something and then they would subsequently make a change to it that has not been approved by us, it is not supposed to be used.
Okay. Representative Ledoux?
Well, this question actually may go a little bit beyond the scope of this bill, so forgive me if it does. But I guess I was just sort of wondering, since there are obviously more than one insurance company, this isn't like electricity or something like that, What's the rationale that insurance companies go to the commission to get their rates raised? Why isn't it like going to the grocery store and buying apples, for example?
Through the chair, Representative Dew, let me say 25 words or less. One of the reasons is that insurance is slightly different than going and buying an apple. Insurance is a promise. You're buying something today that the insurance company is going to perform in the future, and you have to estimate what those costs are because you don't know what the cost of an accident is going to be.
And an apple is a crunchy, delicious fruit.
Right. Thank you, Tom.
And you and you know exactly how much it cost you to grow that apple because those costs have already been borne. Part of it is also historical. I believe, as John George mentioned, that one of the historical reasons for rate review is because of some insolvencies and antitrust, competitive, various kinds of things that were going on in the insurance industry. And so this was one of the mechanisms that was used to kind of control some of this and to be sure that when you need an insurance company, they're actually there for you.
Can I follow up? Yes, I understand that with respect to making sure that there is a minimum rate, although actually I would think there might be other mechanisms for making sure insurance companies are not in insolvent. But what's the rationale for capping the rate? Why doesn't the free market govern?
Representative Anderson, Representative, through the chair, Representative Ledoux. I believe that's sort of the theory behind some of the changes that we are making, is that there should be competition in the market and the market should be able to control and price things properly. One of the issues that we see in Alaska is that we're a small state. We may not have as many insurers here. Competition may not always be as much as we would like it to be. So those, I think, are some of the other reasons.
Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, thank you. We'll look forward to the CS further down the line. And I don't see anyone else. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify before we have the CS? Seeing none, and then I'm going to ask about teleconferences. That's still down. Okay, so we will hold this bill, and we will defer House Bill 180, obviously, because we can't have any testimony coming in through the teleconference. And we will adjourn then at 4:25 and see you tomorrow at 1. And Representative Kotzban here with intent and eagerness. Thank you. We adjourn.